Can a joke on Twitter get you dragged in front of the administrative state? Well, I wouldn't be asking the question if it wasn't obviously yes, but let's talk to the person who can tell you just what this ordeal is all about. Mr. Ben Domenech joins us now. He is the founder and publisher of The Federalist. You know, thefederalist.com is one of our favorite sites. Mr. Ben, good to have you on, sir.
It's good to be with you, Buck. How are you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm hanging in there, you know, in lockdown in NYC. It's not exactly a great time in the history of the city or the world, for that matter. But I'm going to be all right. You're going to be all right. Our audience is going to be all right. Let's tell me first about what happened here, Ben. You made it. Tell folks the story, because I haven't gotten into any of the details. You made a joke on Twitter that upset the libs, had to do with unions, and now you had to go to court. What happened?
So here's what happened, Buck, and I'll try to keep this brief. Basically, back last year during June, there was a walkout happening at Vox Media, something that I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with as a left-of-center website. And they were, demanding all sorts of different things in the new collective bargaining agreement, including some things that I thought to be pretty crazy. But just as a matter of commenting about it on Twitter, I made a joke that amounts to FYI to the Federalist, the organization I run. You know, the next one of you tries to unionize, I'll send you back to the salt mines. Now, this is obviously a joke. I do not now own a salt mine. I have not ruled it out as future purchase. In fact, I think that they could be, you know, pretty productive in terms of people need salt. But it's also one of these things where, you know, the left always wants to use any opportunity to weaponize the bureaucratic state, the administrative state, against people who they don't like. And in this instance, a leftist writer, Matt Brunig, who's married to, at that time, a writer at the Washington Post, now a writer at the New York Times, took umbrage with it and filed a labor complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, one that was also filed by another attorney in Massachusetts. Neither of these men have ever worked with us, have any relationship with us, have ever been an employee or a contractor at the Federalist. But under the National Labor Relations Board's perspective on things, they believe that anyone anywhere can file any kind of complaint along these lines, and they investigate it at taxpayer expense. Now, what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. It basically means they have the power, subpoena power and other power over you, that they can use to try to force you to do whatever they want you to do. In this instance, they attempted to subpoena all email communications between staff on any matters, going back quite a bit, looking not just at it wasn't just a request about benefits or negotiations or anything along those lines. It was a subpoena that applied to all of our reporting, all of our editorial conversations and the like, a huge invasion of our First Amendment rights as a publication. My own employees, of course, thought this all was just a giant joke. They couldn't believe it was something that was actually happening. They were joking about, you know, making shirts or selling branded Federalist salt shakers or things of that nature, which we might still do.
I'd buy one.
Yes. Well, thank you. You'll definitely get the first model when we have them come in. And thankfully at this point, I mean, I kind of looked around and was like, wow, this is incredible. They can subpoena my employees to come and testify in New York, a state that they don't live in and that we don't have an office in. They can force them to come. They can make them pay the expense. They would have to hire their own lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. And thankfully in this instance, I found an organization, a small group of lawyers who basically just work on these types of cases, the New Civil Liberties Alliance, which is an excellent little organization stood up by a fellow named Philip Hamburger, who will be familiar to anybody who reads about First Amendment cases and cases involving the bureaucratic and administrative state. And they offered to come in and really help us fight this battle against these bureaucrats who really don't care that none of my employees were offended by this, that none of them saw it as a threat against their ability to unionize. And that's something that the judge and eventually the administrative law judge ruled in the past couple weeks that in fact it's their opinions and even their affidavits filed saying that they were offended don't matter, that that's irrelevant. And that even in this case, you know, you can't say that this was a joke. It has to be interpreted as a serious threat. Now, I'll tell you, Buck, the truth is I could have settled this for nothing. I mean, there's no threat to my livelihood. You know, they don't have in a case like this, for something as small as this, they would just compel my speech. They would force me to, they proposed deleting the tweet and then posting information about the ability of my employees to unionize, which, as informed people, they're well aware of. And that was something that, of course, I could easily do to make this go away. But the reason that I decided not to is to prove a point, which is that I don't think that most people who are out there in this day and age of social media realize that if someone posted something like this, who, let's just say, owned a series of gas stations or owned a deli or had a small business, and that their neighbor who doesn't like them is offended by it, or their neighbor online, someone who they don't even know, you know, just some random American, can file this type of legally forceful action against them in such a way that it goes after them at taxpayer expense and can, frankly, you know, put them out of business just through the expense of having to fight this type of case. And, you know, the bureaucrats in this case, they always assume that you're just going to bend. They were shocked that I didn't take the deal and instead, you know, proceed to fight. And here's the thing, you know, this will go and work its way through the administrative law process, but then we'll get to the real courts where the Constitution actually matters. And I think we'll have a conversation about whether this is something that Congress intended under their creation of the NLRB, whether it's something that ought to continue in terms of the ability of people who have no connection to any organization to file wherever they want and to compel speech on the part of those whose opinions they just happen to not.